Okay, we'll remain in the school setting next and focus on breakfast with Dr. Elaine Francator. She's an emergency physician practicing in South Florida for the past 15 years and is former vice chair of the emergency department for Cleveland Clinic, Florida, and former co-director of the Cleveland Clinic Stroke Center. She's been involved in health education program for teens at her local high school with a focus on healthful nutrition and physical activity. And thank you, Dr. Rankator.
Thank you. So breakfast, most important meal of the day. How often have we heard that or actually spoken those words? But yet, consuming daily breakfast seems to be very elusive for most people, and maybe some people here in this room. Last March, I was approached by our nutrition educator for the county and said to me, Elaine, we know you're teaching over at the local high school. Could you please remember to give some extra emphasis that Breakfast Awareness Week is coming up, and we're going to be doing this breakfast campaign, and can you encourage everybody to eat breakfast? I said, oh, great. You know, we're always talking about, you know, this in the health class. You know, what's our campaign going to be? And she said, well, you know, we don't eat enough breakfast, and we need to encourage our students to eat breakfast. And I said, well, what do we know about our students? Are our students the same as what's reported in the national data? Do we know if they're eating breakfast or not? Do we have really any information? And so surprisingly to me, as someone who's been in clinical practice for, you know, a number of years, we didn't really know anything about our own student population. And so that's really what led to this sort of humble, simple project, was to look at our local high school population and see, were they breakfast consumers or not? What were they eating? Where were they eating? And then could we really do a targeted breakfast campaign? So you see, I have nothing to disclose. So, you know, briefly, I think everyone in this room is probably well aware of what the current literature shows and also what the limitations are. But in brief, we know that breakfast consumption decreases with increasing age. And among children, it's really the adolescent population, so the 12 to 19-year-old group, as well as the young adults, are the least consumers for breakfast. We do know that adolescent boys consume breakfast more often than girls, and with respect to ethnicity, it's more common for breakfast consumption in white children than in black or Hispanic children. And for some reason in my Windows Vista, the next slide didn't come through, but the slide that's missing here is with regard to limitations that I found, there's not a consistent definition for what is breakfast. And so I think that gives us problems when we're looking at, you know, data, and then we need to sort of clarify that when we pursue breakfast studies ourselves. But what is breakfast? Is it anything that we consume before the noon meal or before the noon hour? Is it related to actually what you consume? So what if we had a student who said, oh, yeah, I've designated myself as a breakfast consumer, but I only drink coffee. Is that breakfast? And then, you know, in addition, the time or you know what time of day we consume breakfast and you know what we consume. But the other thing is, are you a breakfast consumer if you only have breakfast one day a week? So does the frequency also impact whether or not you're really classifying people properly? So that's what we went to do with this simple study. And so we chose a simple random sample of subjects from our high school, and what we tried to assess in the survey was, did they self-designate themselves as a breakfast consumer or non-consumer? Where was their source of breakfast food, home or elsewhere? What was the frequency of breakfast consumption? Was it daily or just, you know, one day a week, 4 days a week? What foods or beverages were consumed? What percentage of the kids were actually breakfast-only consumers? And then what were the reasons for skipping breakfast? A little bit about our demographics, and also this is one of the reasons I thought it was important to understand our own population. This local high school that I teach at, it happens to be the largest public high school in the entire country, and there's actually a student population of 5,500 students. I mean, it's enormous. And relatively speaking, it's pretty equally distributed with regard to gender, 48% female and 52% male. Another unique feature about it, it's a very large population of Hispanic students. So the vast majority of the student body, 90%, is either non-Hispanic, white, or Hispanic. So we had some insight into a particular ethnic group. So we actually administered the survey to 400 students. We got a completed survey back in 389. And self-designated, there were 330 students who said they were breakfast consumers, and 59 seems like a small number right now, said that they were non-consumers. And again, you can see the distributions between genders. If you broke out the frequency for breakfast consumption, and this is the male student population where the N was 157, this is the actual raw numbers for people who like raw data, but you can see, you know, that there's, you know, heavily concentrated number 71 that actually have breakfast 5 to 6 days a week, but only 28 that are daily breakfast consumers. And if we want to designate a breakfast consumer as someone who's eating breakfast daily, and really that should be the ultimate goal, it's not that many. And here you can actually see the percentages for people who rather see percents. But again, as far as daily breakfast consumption, it's only 10.8% of the population. With regard to female, again, the N is 173. And again, there's a large percentage of female consumers that really it's only a few days a week. And again, you can see here the percents where daily is only 16%. For those people who do consume breakfast, and the pattern is similar to boys and girls, the vast majority of consumers are getting their breakfast from home. And this is for girls, so it's, you know, roughly around 85% for both. And it was interesting because one of the things that came up about this breakfast campaign that they wanted to do is that for a student body of 5,500, that volume of sales for breakfast was only 200. And so again, the question in my mind was, are they not there for breakfast? Do they not like what you have to offer? You know, why are the sales so low? So that was sort of another, you know, question to answer. So 85% roughly is getting breakfast from home, but where else do they get breakfast? And this, you know, pie chart shows you sort of the obvious, and it's obvious to me because these are the things that happen to be right around the neighborhood of the school. So 28.6%, it's a McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King, and then you can see the others, Panera, Dunkin' Donuts, and a local bagel shop, and Starbucks as the other major places. And there's another group, and some people get breakfast at Publix and Denny's. What are they eating? Fairly similar to national data for male students. It's really ready-to-eat cereals as the predominant, you know, choice of breakfast meal. Also, there's, you know, bread items and pancakes, waffles, sort of as their big choices, and fruit because the fruit's going with their cereal. As far as beverage, you can see that the top choices are milk, juice, and a lot of water. So water's good; it's great for hydration, but you know, no nutrients there. For females, same thing. You know, heavily weighted with regard to ready-to-eat cereals. Bread items, fruit. They happen to have some other, you know, categories, and so the girls were actually high consumers of some variety of a breakfast bar. Choice of beverage. Again, you can see milk, juice, water, you know, water being the number one, and they happen to be more interested in the coffees, lattes, and teas as well. So here's one of the interesting slides. In looking at the male consumers who self-designated themselves, there was a question about whether or not the only thing that they consumed for breakfast was a beverage. And you can see about 56.5% said no, that they actually had food. But that's, you know, only a little more than half. So the others, there's one, 17.5, the green, all they consume is a breakfast beverage. That's it. And then you can see occasionally 23.4, and then most days 2.6. So if you look at that, that's a large percentage of students who designate themselves as breakfast consumers, but it's just a beverage. Similar for females. So that's worrisome. All right, what do we know about those who designated themselves as non-consumers? Interestingly enough, again, the N is really small, but of the non-consumers, there were more males than females. And the one thing that turned out to be interesting with regard to ethnicity is that there were more Hispanic males than Hispanic females who were non-consumers, almost 2-to-1. But otherwise, you know, not too much difference in terms of totals. National data tells us some similar things, that the biggest reasons for non-consuming breakfast is that they're either not hungry or they don't have enough time. But we had an additional question, and that was, would you eat if you could eat later? And so if you had the availability of food and could eat later during the school morning, would you consume breakfast? And so it was quite interesting. So you can see the distribution of non-consumption and the reason why. And you can see, you know, not enough time is the big, you know, reason in both males, females, and overall. But you can also see that there's that gold color bar where there's a number of students that would eat if they could eat later. And then, of course, some, you know, we had, you know, choices of, you know, they could choose, you know, hunger and time and later. But there's a significant portion that would eat breakfast later if they could. So you'd convert a non-consumer to a consumer. So again, it turned out to be 22% would eat later if they could. We also looked for those regular consumers on the days that they didn't eat breakfast. So these are the non-daily breakfast consumers. Did they have any difference in terms of reasons for not consuming breakfast? And pretty much it's the same thing. It's all about time and not being hungry. But again, 24% would eat later if they could. So in summary, overall, 85% of the respondents reported themselves as breakfast consumers. But when you look at the data further, 39% of the female consumers and 26% of the male consumers reported eating breakfast fewer than 4 days a week. So if we really think of something as a habit, it's really what you're doing the predominance of the time. So if there's 7 days in the week, my designation was to be really a consumer, you should be doing it most days of the week, so that would be more than four. So I term those, you know, consumers who only ate a few days a week as oligo consumers. And so 43.2% of the respondents were either non-consumers or oligo consumers. So that's a big difference than the national data, which really says we're somewhere around 75% breakfast consumption. Again, reasons for skipping breakfast are pretty consistent. It's really about time and hunger. But here we do know that this student population would eat later if they had access and were permitted. So what's going to follow from this, we actually have a meeting with our nutrition advisory board in December, and we're actually going to plan a targeted breakfast campaign with the hopes to actually have some policy change to allow students to actually consume breakfast in the classroom, you know, with a healthy, you know, portable, you know, item, but we allow that to, you know, be able to happen, rather than what usually happens for those who would like to consume later, and that is, in between class, quick pass through the vending machine, pick out something unhealthy, have a mindless, you know, consumption of a food item, and then be on their way. So we'd like to, you know, be able to present healthful portable options. These are my two nieces, Emily and Adele, and so we try to encourage daily breakfast and healthful breakfast. So we didn't even, you know, address really, you know, trying to get them to eat healthily. We're just trying to get them to eat right now. But in our class, in our health education class, and sort of at this school, we use the quote by Aristotle, and it states, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act but a habit, and so we're trying to promote healthy habits. So I thank you for listening to me, and again, it's sort of odd for me to be here in the public health arena since I've been really, I think, a public health practitioner trapped in a clinician's body for far too long. And it's really exciting to be proactive and in the area of health promotion and wellness and not just treating, you know, chronic illness. So thank you.
Any questions for Dr. Rankatori?
Yes. First, it was a very nice presentation with really interesting findings, but I just want to have a question. Mm-hmm. For those things which report to drink only for breakfast, mm-hmm. does this beverage could be a kind of shake with which can be good for health, or the question exclude for this possibility?
Yeah, in the section where we actually have them designate what beverages they're consuming, and so, you know, you can only have so many slides, but in the section when we actually looked at those who were consuming beverage only for breakfast,
okay,
it wasn't a protein shake.
Okay.
It was just coffee, tea,
water,
okay, milk, or fruit juice, because we actually had a separate category for fruit smoothie, because there's juice blends and Jamba Juice and all those others. So it wasn't, you know, sufficient with with meeting energy requirements or nutrient requirements.
Thank you.
Yes.
Have you spoken with the teachers here about breakfast in the
classroom? Yes. It's interesting that it's like a 60-40 split. The fortunate thing that we have at this particular high school is the principal and vice principal are very supportive of anything that we can do that's going to be about health promotion. And sort of when a separate part to this is this new health education class that we started about 4 years ago. And in introducing that after the first pilot year, we've been engaging the faculty to be role models and exhibit modeling behavior. So we're actually trying to tackle adult behavior and getting them to eat breakfast. So they've really been more receptive and open to having something simple and portable to have them eat in the classroom because they're trying to do the same thing. So we sort of did an end around to get their acceptance. It was interesting. Yeah, it was actually low. It was probably the one thing that actually surprised me, because it is quite popular, and in the community in South Florida, the energy drinks are extraordinarily popular. But it was actually so small. It was I think there was up four that actually consumed it. So it's not popular at all. So they're really just going for a Starbucks, but not the energy drinks. The background to this, the way I actually got started in this is that, in my work with the Stroke Center, I've been, tackling and butting my head against the wall trying to change adult behavior with modifiable risk factors for disease. And so I had switched focuses and said, look, let me just help kids get healthy habits. And so I sort of had been formulating this idea for a health education class. And so we started it in 2004. And part of that actually brings in the parents. And so so it's sort of my humble way. Before I started, in a public health program pursuing my MPH, I was doing this without having really, the right foundation or formal training to do it. But I sort of was going through the ecological model of health behavior. And so I engaged the community, the parents, the YMCA, everyone sort of in the town is involved.
Okay,
so thank you.
You.